Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Hey guys, this is NC from NC Anime Podcast. Today I have Matt Drago. How are you doing today? And tell me about yourself.
I'm great, Mason. Thanks for having me on your show. An actor. Living the dream. I've got a great movie coming out somewhere in Montana. It's a real story of the times. Kind of investigates, and explores some of the just things that we're going through as a society right now, as a country. I play the West Coast director. My friend Graham McTavish plays the Montana rancher. Graham is just a phenomenal actor. It was a blessing to be able to work with him. You can see Graham McTavish's work in like tons of things, including Lord of the Rings, House of the Dragon, the new Game of Thrones show. So it was just a real blessing to be able to work with him. Michelle Hurd, just from Picard, and many other things. Just a really wonderful cast and crew, and just a story of the time. So looking forward to having a conversation with you about it today.
Cool. Where can I find you on socials or anything like that?
Absolutely. Honestly, I really do tend to just kind of dive right into one social media platform because there's so many out there. You can find me on Instagram at Matt Drago. That's MattDrago at Matt Drago. From there, you've got my link tree. It's got my website for both me as an actor at MattDrago.com, my production company, DragonHunterProductions.com. And it's got my link tree if you want to check out, all my other social media platforms, including my IMDb. And, it's all right there on my Instagram.
All right, well, we're going to introduce today's topic, acting, getting a major, getting a lead role in that. So, you getting a lead role, how that start, necessarily?
For this project, they all start a little bit differently from this one. It's actually a really great story. I'm glad you brought it up. I actually was working in a restaurant, and I've always kind of been the type of artist, actor to help my friends out. And my friend did not have an agent. I had an agent, so I was able to get her in with my agent. In 2019, she moved back to Montana with her husband. And a year later, she called me up and she said, hey, I just came across this script that my friend wrote. And every time I read one of the lead characters, I see your face. And from that point, I, basically was just intrigued, humbled that she would kind of reach out to me in that capacity. And I said, well, how can I put myself on tape? Because it seems like a really interesting part. And I would, love to put my hat in the ring, so to speak, to see if I'm right for it. And I did. And, went down to my my acting teacher. We did the scene one time. We filmed it. And he literally just kind of made this face and just was like, and I was like, what does that mean? Because now we do a lot of our auditions on camera, so we can do them again and again and again and again ad nauseum and kind of pick the best one that we like. This was interesting because I did take one take of it, and I literally just sent that in. And his reaction was just like, you have a really clear idea of what you want to do with this character. Because I think this character in many ways is a lot. We're very connected. I feel very connected to this character. So I sent it in. A few weeks went by. Maybe it was a month. Kind of just tried to move on because you have to do that as an actor. You have to kind of compartmentalize. Do your work, put it on tape, send it off to the powers that be, and just let it go. A couple weeks later, I got reached back out to by Brandon Smith, the director, Eden Bryant, the producer, and they set up a producer session with me. and happened to be while I was out of town. I was actually visiting my mom in Virginia, and you know, just kind of had her go in the other room, get the Zoom, the camera out, like I'm doing right now, and just run through the scene a couple times. But what happened in that callback, that producer session, as we say, you know, in the business, was we talked a lot about the character. I think I only did the scene once, but we were on the Zoom call for probably a good 45 minutes. And we just explored. I just was so curious about the character, first of all. I asked a lot of questions. I was just really interested in the story in general, like really just regardless of whether I booked the part or not, just really fascinated by this really pivotal story, because it is a real politically charged, emotionally charged story of the times that I feel like many people can glean from right now. And so because of that, I just, as a person, as Matt, was so intrigued by the just story of it and the relationships within that story. And it was just a really great producer session. And then, you know, we parted ways, and a few weeks went by, and I heard from the casting director, my friend Jared Brocksterman, who had set up the producer session. And he called me up and he said, Matt, you know, unfortunately, we've gotten thousands upon thousands of, you know, auditions for this and submissions. And, you know, we whittled it down to, you know, about a dozen callbacks or half a dozen callbacks or whatever it was. And unfortunately, we had to tell all the other actors that they will not be playing the part of Fabian Verdugo, and the part is yours. And
that's a good
at that point. Yeah, I know. It was pretty cool. It was like he got me in that mode of like, you know, because again, I think as an actor, you kind of go into like, you know, the chances of me getting this or that. But like, you kind of have to let that go. In that moment, I honestly was like, I was like down, but then a little inquisitive when he said it that way, to pure, you know, just joy and happiness and excitement and jumping up and down. And, you know, I did. I just was so excited at that point. But I think when you get the part, it also sinks in where that's where the work begins, you know, because that's when you've got the job. So now you have to almost go in there and earn it, you know. At least that's how I look at it as an actor, is that I want to do everything I can to make sure that I'm giving the best performance and being the best team player and castmate that I can be. So it just was a really, really exciting day, something that I'll always cherish. And it brought me into the world of Somewhere in Montana.
Okay. So that's how it happened. So before you had the agent, how did that situation play out?
Before I had the agent?
Before you had access to an agent, giving you access to roles.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of actors have to kind of do their own work to kind of find their own avenues of auditions. I mean, there's online platforms like Actors Access and LA Casting where you can submit yourself. But I think building your team is really pivotal. You try to build yourself up enough where you have enough stuff to showcase yourself. And then you have to try to build your team with getting a good agent or a good manager, people that can, you know, kind of hopefully take you to the next level and utilize their connections with casting directors, producers, and directors to kind of get you in the door. So it starts with, you know, tenacity. It starts with just the love of putting yourself out there in any way that you can, just like I'm doing on your podcast right now. And then, you know, just trying to build your team is what I tell a lot of actors. You are the sum of your parts, really, not just in acting, really in any career, and in life too. So I always say, like, you know, build your team, people that just understand your vision and want the best for you. And I'm really grateful right now. I've got a wonderful manager that I'm working with at Ignite Talent Management, Richard John Martin. I just signed with HRI Talent, Tanya Kleckner over there. I've got a wonderful PR rep, Mia Hansen at Portrait PR. So these are just people that I rely on so that I can just focus on what I should be focusing on, which is acting and developing my craft in any way that I can and putting myself out there in any way that I can, like I'm doing today with you, Mason, and just letting the powers that be the powers that be, but really stay in my lane. That way I can really just enjoy the art of what I do.
Okay. And how does an actor identify the scaling in which they need to have that agent? Is it any time or is it like a specific moment where they need more access?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it really just depends on where you're at in your career. I mean, the tough part about being an actor is there really is no clear-cut path. I think when you feel like, you know, you have a body of work that can pair you with a good agent that represents you well, it's probably time to take that step. But I don't mean it the wrong way. I mean, there are some friends that, you know, maybe grew up and their friend is an agent. So maybe before they have a body of work, they can, you know, just partner up with somebody that can help them build that. There's no real rhyme or reason, but I do think that the best thing that you can do is really have those conversations with your reps. And when you start to meet agents or managers, just have the conversation of, are we on the same page? Do we want the same things? Do you really believe in my craft as an actor? Because there are a lot of different actors out there. You know, we're all kind of different types. We all have different myths that we give off, different things that we give off in our energies. And so you want to find people that really align with your dreams in this business.
So the background of the character you want, how was that process for you discovering more of the character in the script?
That's a great question. I mean, it all started with Brandon Smith. He's a wonderful collaborator, somebody that early on put me on Zoom calls just like we're on right now. And we just went through scene by scene. And it was an extraordinary process with Brandon specifically because we were collaborating on building the character together. And that doesn't always happen. There are a lot of sets where you're on and you do your own work. I always say that actors do their work in pre-production. And the crews really are the people that make films great when you're in production. Those are the people that pull together and, you know, put these incredible shots together, build the sets, the costume design, you know, gaffing, electrical. I mean, their sound, it's such a team sport. I think for me, this process with Brandon in building the character together was just so special. It was so unique because we go scene by scene and we found different ways to experience, you know, the arc of Fabian Verdugo in Somewhere in Montana because he is the outsider. Fabian comes into a world that he's unfamiliar with and it really does lead to a more difficult acting part because I am not in the world that I am put in. I'm an LA guy, right? So I don't necessarily understand these people and I'm not from their world. And so my biggest struggle as the actor in portraying Fabian was to get to the place because I felt Fabian felt things grand. He felt things big, sometimes even larger than life. And I gave myself the permission to try to feel him big. And I worked with my acting teachers a lot with that. But it really worked well because, you know, like my acting teacher said, he's like, you're feeling it big, but it's truthful. It's honest. And as long as you can be honest, you can be, you know, quote unquote, big on camera if the emotions are real and they're connected to what you're feeling. And I think it works so well working with Graham because Graham is so stoic. He is a pro. He works with his eyes. He's quiet. He's reserved. And so what I tried to bring dynamically to the relationship of John and Fabian was not being afraid to be that opposite to John. Because, you know, when Graham McTavish, booked the part, he went to Montana and he studied kind of how Montana ranchers acted. And they don't say a lot. they do a lot. They work with their hands. There's not a lot of long conversations like we're having right now. It's very much like, hey, can you, yeah, you want to, yeah, it, you know, like it's very, you know what you need to do. So, you know, just do it. We don't have to talk about it, right? I way to be the antithesis to that, on the opposite, because the stories that we're telling in somewhere in Montana are based on those opposites. So, you know, working with Graham, working with Michelle Hurd, who really became just like a big sister to me, developing those relationships with Jonathan Stoddard and Kate Orsini and Tasha Gates and Kaylee Macchio. Macchio. She's an Italian, so I always say it Macchio, but it's Macchio. She plays Lainey. Just phenomenal actors in this. Andrew Roa, who plays John's kind of ranch hand, his best friend. Just so many wonderful characters to dive into. But for me personally, I gave myself permission to be the outsider. I gave myself the permission to be big. And I struggled with that as an actor because I felt like sometimes, you know, it was going to come across too big because, again, my character was in the world of all of these Montana people. But as I saw the film play out and I knew my truth was to feel baby and big and showcase that, when I finally saw the final cut of the movie, I think it really works well.
All right. So as Fabian, what was one element other than making it big, being the outsider, that was in addition to that about his character?
So many things. In addition to, so much of it for me was the backstory, was building the character in terms of where I felt like he came from. I felt like Fabian was lonely. He was passionate, but he didn't have a lot of close family around him. He was very focused on his goal, his dream, and his legacy. And his legacy is in film. So as a director, I felt like he would be that person that would go down with the ship. He would fight for and with his actors. He would protect his crew. Even if it came across that he was, you know, getting frustrated on set, it's because he cared. And I think that's a big thing that I really tried to showcase in the film, is that Fabian really cared. And I felt like the backstory for me gave me a lot of that. And again, I didn't have to go too far. I love films. I always have. And so I felt like for me, it gave me permission to dive into Matt's personal life and to almost cherry pick the things that gave me the emotional value to then put towards Fabian's story. And, you know, some of that was like the maybe need for a father figure, which, you know, I kind of put into my character, and the need to be respected, which I think we all feel sometimes, you know, especially if we're in, you know, a situation that we're not familiar with. So I think, to answer your question, I think the backstory was a big part of developing the character for me, in understanding why Fabian did the things he did and why he was so committed to fighting for his dreams and his legacy.
True. I mean, building the story to a character is really important. Yeah, you got to know where they come from. You have to know really how to drive the character from the background, but also put into the foreground of this actual screen. But in addition to doing that, you're also capturing a moment of character that's fictional, but giving a transformative approach to them, making them connect, making people see them as a person they could potentially see in real life. So that's kind of what usually the background that usually fulfills.
100%. I couldn't have said it better.
So with that being said, you being as Fabian, what were some branching out from where they were in Montana, somewhere in Montana, to other projects that may have got no recognition.
So basically my my previous projects that I've done to kind of get me to...
Someone from Montana, U.S. Fabian, where did other people branch out from that opportunity, seek you out, or that hasn't happened yet?
I mean, I think a big part of it for me, you know, with the industry right now, I mean, I live in Los Angeles, and LA is going through one of the worst disasters. I have a fire actually literally a few miles away from me right now. The industry has definitely taken a time out right now just to focus on, you know, much, much bigger issues. And homes, which we're talking about legacy, is like our people's main legacy, right? Your home. So I think for me, looking forward, is I was able to get, you know, a great manager out of it. I was able to get a great agent out of it. I was able to get a great PR rep out of it. And we're ready to go. Like, we're ready to take on all the opportunities that come our way. I've had some auditions recently. For, you know, soap opera, TV, film. So I'm definitely getting, you know, more acknowledgement, which is a real blessing that I'm so grateful for. But we just kind of have to wait and see, because we got to get past these fires. And then hopefully the industry will open back up again. I mean, you know, some people are hoping that things will start to pick up again a little bit more in February, March, but the reality is that I'm represented in different states. So if I can't work in LA, then, you know, maybe my rep in Atlanta or in Montana, you know, can get me something there while the industry is recovering here in LA.
True. What is one moment when you were Fabi that you really felt like you were the character while performing what was said in the script in a shooting, not necessarily just like one particular moment?
Oof, you're asking some good questions. I like that. I really do. I go back to the cattle ranch scene and just really embracing this moment that I had with David, who is the actual owner of the ranch that we shot at. And I have this picture with Graham and I and David and Brandon, and it's just the four of us. And in my way, I say in some ways, like, Brandon and I are kind of the directors, because like I play the director in the movie, he's the director somewhere in Montana. And then Graham plays the rancher, and David is the real life rancher.
Oh,
it's the ranch.
Okay.
But it's the four of us. It's one of my Instagram posts. It's a very like behind the scenes photo, if you kind of scroll back when we were shooting. And it's what I said. If you look at what I said on that post, basically is it was the moment where I understood the power of this film, because I understood in that moment what the story really was. And I understood it because of a conversation that I had with David, the real life cattle rancher. And he knew what I meant when I asked him this question. I looked at him and I said, David, how do you do this? Because he raises cattle and then he has to, you know, do what he does to feed his family, right? So he raises them. And you can tell, like, he cares about his ranch. He cares about the cattle. But it's an active cattle ranch. And again, I asked him the question, how do you do this? And it's the first time I ever, Mason, saw him be emotional. He looked right up at the sun and he said, oh, it's still hard. And he had a tear in his eye. And it was in that moment that I was like, wow, even if we're different, even if we don't see maybe eye to eye politically or from a religious standpoint, we need each other. We truly need each other. I think we forget that sometimes. And there's more that could connect us than could ever divide us, is another theme that I think is really powerful in the movie. And in that moment, I realized, like, you know, like, I go out for a steak dinner. Yeah, I couldn't do what he does. I need him. Maybe he needs me. Maybe there's a way that, like, we all are more connected than we give ourselves credit for sometimes. But being on that ranch and experiencing just God's wallpaper of Montana really just was such fuel for not only me, the whole cast, to really just thrive in. and really just to collectively tell a story that's bigger than all of us.
You bring an interesting concept. It's the concept of the handler of the raw materials, the producer that buys the raw materials. Then you go into the producer that makes it, and then after they make it, people shipping it, and then the storefront where you buy it. So in society, we're very interwoven in what consumers buy or what product or service is done. But there's a lot of change of hands for that to happen. So when you really find the interconnected nature of everything that everyone does, yes, one particular impact on a ranch might be one ranch, but that ranch is exported always out for the meat, for the skin, for the raw materials that was used to make the materials in the first place. Raising of the cattle. Having the cattle there is not just a resource, but access to a market that is giving a livelihood to the person running the ranch. And that is the thing. It kind of goes back to, like, you know, you are working by the land. You are doing things to take care of it. It's more of a traditional way of life that is not really seen as much. With advanced technology and city life population centers growing, it's like the transition away. You're not working the land as much. And that probably is one thing that people don't realize, is the fact that working by the land is sometimes the most honest work you could have in a livelihood.
Agree. That's a big, that was beautifully said and very astute, because I think that what this film does is it honors all legacies. Because again, I think, and I'll speak for me, I mean, like, I'm in film. I love film. Film is a way to communicate. It's a way to share stories that live on past yourself. We lost the great David Lynch today. Think about how many stories he's left on this planet, right? It's impactful. But they're all also what I would consider simple legacies. And I don't mean like just small. I mean simplistic, like owning a ranch, building a family, you know, operating a business, giving that business on to your next generation. This film really pays honor to that type of American legacy. You know, the one where people just want to enjoy their lives and build something with their hands and create an internal legacy that matters to them. And I think that, you know, the main scene that I always think of when I think about my work in this film is that 10-page scene that Graham and I have. We have a 10-page scene together. It's just the two of us. And it explores that. And what it explores is, you know, John showing me his legacy. And it's such a beautiful dynamic moment in the film, because what he's really doing is he's letting me into his world, and he's letting me into what he cares about and what's important to him in his life. And the second that he does that, so many of our petty differences melt away. And I think that's such a great message to share to so many people right now that do tend to forward-facing, you know, cancel each other out or find ways to hate one another without really getting to know them. And there is an opportunity for a film like this to connect with people, because it really does resonate with the idea that, again, there is more that can connect us than could ever divide us. And when you open up to somebody and you share your heart to them and what matters to you and what your legacy looks like, it becomes very, very hard to hate that person, because you start to build that respect for someone when you do that. And I always say this, I think respect is the highest form of love. And I think this film does a really wonderful job of showcasing that.
And, you know, for me, that, you know, interconnectedness, understanding what someone's role and livelihood was, that you know, for many years, he wanted to be a small sole proprietor. He wanted to run his own business, but the way he did it was outlets and flea markets. So wholesale. So he would sell things, use merchandise, resell it, and he can get a small profit. Now, he's not going to be able to get the demand on which it once sold before, but the resale market typically has like notoriety to movie, if it's a VHS or DVD, or to even to electronics. But his specialty was connecting with people, giving an honest price, and working with them to get the item either they did do, or they were too low, or he took some money off it, maybe didn't make money off it, but found like a place in them to have that. He's transitioned that to being a bike mechanic. And now I had to re-understand him, because now what he's doing is even more gut-wrenching. He's in the shed many hours a day. He's fixing the bike. He's putting the oil. He's going through the chain. Now he's it's just like a totally different livelihood that he chose. Even though he's still in flea markets selling retail, it completely changed when he wanted to be a bike handler. So refurbished bicycles of different decades, like 70s to anywhere in between, and really get into a totally new community to sell product to. I just see him beat up his body, but like, I accept that he's happy doing it, and that he knows that, yeah, it might not be fulfilling as when he stopped doing it, you're not going to have anything, but it's more of the clarity of life that he has right now.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. It goes back to this, like, you know, simple legacy. It's what we call the American dream, right? And I think that we need to get back to really just honoring each other's American dream. And it can be making films. It could be running a ranch. It could be the story that you just shared with me. It could be any of those things. It's our time on this planet to make an impact in some way, to, you know, write our story and leave it behind, because we only get so much time here, right? So I think this film does a really wonderful job of just really honoring that legacy and honoring anybody's legacy and the American dream.
True. What was, when you were shooting it as Fabian, what was a moment that you really did see the interaction of everything behind the scenes working to shoot one scene? What was that, like, one scene that you just saw everything all at once to just get ready for like 1 minute shot or 30 seconds?
Yeah, probably it was a blur, but it was my last day on set. I actually shot 7 scenes the last day that I was on set, and it was a whirlwind. And just like, I was just in such a state of bliss, but I was in such a state also of appreciation for the crew. First and foremost, the crew just hustling to set up after set up after set up, to a wonderful conversation I had with Brandon, where he articulated, you know, how he directs, which is so astute. He has people that are the masters of their own craft. You know, where he'd say, like, I can't pack up that truck like Troy does. I can't gaff those lights like Jason can. You know, I can't run that cam like AJ does. Like, it's such a team sport. And I feel like the last day that I was on set, I just, like, fully appreciated it. I fully, like, understood just how powerful film is, because it really is. It's such a collaborative art. You just are the sum of all your parts. And because we had to hustle that day to get so much in, it just really made me just appreciate just the incredible team that we had built together.
Yeah, I definitely had that experience. When I was able to do the production notebook in the small film that I had for Mass Communications, a 3-minute silent film, Brain, Bronze versus the Jocks. Blondes versus plates.
But, I mean, we had to do a silent filter, grayscale, cut down the dimensions to what actual silent film was.
But the weird thing was,
we were acting, but there was no sound. So, the only thing we can add to understand the moment of what was happening was captions.
But yes, I did get a pot through my face, but that was fun. I liked doing it. I liked being the leader of the jocks. But in that moment, understanding what truly is taking a font is
what type of you feeling? How many people are going to be involved? What is the basic storyline? What's going to happen? What is the progression of how it's going to happen?
Right.
What is the scaling in which it could happen to be more relatable? You know, even if you reach the climax, what is the following action? What is the reconciliation moment that either gives more or takes away? That is what really realizing what power of film would be.
I mean, that's just one example, but like there is many
interviews with people and have this very specialized understanding what they're doing at any given time because of the world.
So if you give that special role and hear them out, you actually hear a lot more than meets the eye.
I have nothing to add to that. That was beautiful. That was perfectly said.
What is your favorite part that you have not mentioned about the movie yet?
Well, my favorite part is this one. So I mean, for me, I'm just really honestly enjoying the bliss of this role. We take role by role as actors, but this one is a legacy piece for me as Matt. It's something that I know that I'll always look back on and be very fond of because of the work that I put into it, because of when it came in my life. I lost my stepfather a year before we started shooting. We were supposed to shoot actually days after he passed away, and the film got pushed a year and gave me a year to process losing one of my best friends. And I put a lot of him into my work in the film to honor him. And I actually wear a Tree of Life pendant that has my stepfather's ashes in it. And I say stepfather, but he was really my dad. Chaz was my dad. And so I really look back on this process, and the thing that keeps resonating to me over and over again is just the people. Just the people, the collection of friends. Nobody's ever called me mate in life. Graham calls me mate when we left each other after he had to get back to his other job. You know, we had breakfast one last time, and he just simply said, "See you, mate." And I knew that was a real sign of camaraderie because of the story that we had shared together. And so many times we would just, you know, go on hikes together and just spend time together. And I felt like everybody in this film really needed this film in their lives. There were different people that opened up to me about things that they were going through in their own lives, and I let them, you know, tell their stories, but they resonated with me. And I just felt like everybody really needed this kind of kumbaya trip and a film like this to express just the need to connect and the need to find forgiveness and the need to, you know, find acceptance. And isn't that a story that we all need right now in our society? So yeah, to answer your question, I really am. I'm stuck on Fabian Verdugo because I think he is such a powerful character. And I think he's a character that many could misinterpret as being a diva, but in actuality, he's just really passionate. He just really, really loves his art. And the one thing that I really wanted to do is to make sure that people knew that, like, he was sacrificing. Like, he will be the first to go down with the ship, like the Titanic. Like, he's going to be the captain that stays on board and make sure everybody gets off safe, and he will go down with his ship. I think that was a really, like, important thing for me to deliver with my characters, to not make him just, like, a Hollywood diva, is to give him the real depth that he deserved, which really came to a lot of the things that we've already discussed, the backstory, the relationship that I had with Graham McTavish, you know, and to him just being a pro, and Michelle Hurd being a pro, and Jonathan Stoddard, and Kate Orsini, and Tasha Gates, and Kaylee Macchio, and all of these wonderful actors that just really came together and wanted to tell this story under the umbrella of Brandon Smith, who created this just wonderful environment for us to, you know, have our time together to really build out the characters. And a lot of what you see on screen is because of the relationships that were built off screen. And I really do feel like you feel a lot of the that we have, because I got to be honest, like, everybody's just, we're all so close. And you don't say that about every film. You don't say that about every TV or film project. But Mason, like, hand to God, like, we are a really, really close-knit group. We love telling the story together. And the most important thing that came out of it was that we have something that we collectively feel is impactful to our modern society and is a film that really can resonate with a lot of people in this country.
Yeah. Collaboration, the machine with many parts, no one is not insignificant, everything works together. That's pretty much how it should be. Yeah. Without the collaboration or the collective, where will we be? You know, we work together, we socialize, we need that interact, but sometimes one person can't do it all. That's why you have the team to do it. And that's why when you build your team, for you, outside of the studio, the agent, all that, that is you, but with other people. So it really gives a, all right, we can do this. Let's do it. Now let's look, see what the next opportunity lies.
Absolutely. I have nothing to add. That was great.
As we wrap this up, acting and then getting out, you know, the lead major role, what does concluding nation want people to have from this particular interaction, the movie?
Sorry, ask that question one more time.
What do you want people to reach out for concluding statements? What do you want them to know?
I want them to know that this is an indie, and we need podcasts like yours to share the message of this film. I hope I did a good job of that today, and that people are intrigued to go out and seek somewhere in Montana and turn it on and watch it. And really watch it. I feel like this is a film that needs to be watched without your tablet or your computer or your iPhone if you can. Go to the theater if it's near you. I have posted on my Instagram at Matt Drago what theaters are currently showing the film. I will be sharing updates there as I know more theaters that are going to roll out the film. I just jumped off of a Zoom with Brandon Smith, and he told me that there's a good shot that it will be coming to even more theaters soon. Go to the theater. Go see it. I always say that films like this need interaction. They need those two-minute conversations after the movie. What did you think? You know, it made me feel this way. This is a coming-together film, so we need to come together to see it. Will it land eventually on streaming? Yes, but that might be in the very distant future. So if you have a theater near you that is showing it right now, I actually have a link on my website, mattdrago.com. You can go down to the Fandango link that I have, and that will update all of the movie theaters that are currently showing the film. So if you have one that's near you, go see it, bring your friends, bring your family, and just take in a really great, you know, film, and let it be a message that resonates with you and hopefully brings something to your life.
All right. Well, thank you for being here, Matt. It was really fun having this conversation with you, hearing your honesty, seniority, and just overall into your bringing. Well, may I give it a glimpse of what the movie felt like for you? This concludes acting, getting a lead role. Thank you for being here. And that's it.
Thank you, Mason. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on today.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.